for tonight. I want you all night.
Or when they're not resting starters, you know, KD was out, but they haven't lost a game in like 4 months or something. It's insane. They're just on a hell of a run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the latter part of the season, I would probably give Steph Curry the MVP. Because, like, during the times that KD was out, there were a few games that they lost in the beginning, but as soon as he got his groove back, he was playing, like, you know, like 2016 Steph Curry again. You know, and they beat a bunch of good teams. I don't remember what teams they were, but, you know, during that stretch when KD was out, and Steph played out of his mind, so I think that was...
Yeah, I would probably have him above. I mean, people are gonna hate me for this, but I would possibly have him above Westbrook in the MVP race.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, again, I think winning games has to matter. You know, he's the best player on the best team. He had a great year. It's not like he didn't have a good season. He had a really good season. And I know Westbrook got triple doubles, but they didn't win games. And, you know, yeah, he might be kind of alone, but that's not how it's been for the MVP. I had Kawhi 1, Harden 2, Steph 3, LeBron 4, and Westbrook 5. Just because I'm not as impressed by the triple double.
It's an arbitrary number.
Yeah, I'm not fooled by it. Yeah, I'm not obsessed with, you know, decimals.
I would be... Same with you. I would be very uncomfortable, giving the MVP to a 7th seed. Were they 6th seed? 6th seed. Yeah, I would be very uncomfortable. Okay. So, So let's do look forward to the finals and, you know, see what happens. Hopefully, Dave, you'll get your prediction right with the fo-fo-fo-fo.
Yeah, I mean, it would be incredible if they did this. Obviously, unprecedented. The closest was that, 0-1 Lakers team that went 16-1. Yeah. I fully admit that it's not likely because it's never happened before, so it would be something special and sort of rare. But it just feels like everything is sort of setting up for that. And this is just to me. And I've been saying this since about mid-March.
You have.
When I saw how they were playing without KD and how KD was basically going to be able to come back and be like an accessory. Mm. Not a main cog, but hey, look at this extra fun thing that we have that we can use, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's been fantastic in the playoffs. He's been they've been feeding him in that high post, mid post area that they like to give Draymond the ball. They get the high post split. He can actually work from that position and score. And so if he starts to work and the double team comes, well, you've got an open shooter off that high post split. So, you know, it just unlocks this next level of stuff, which is going to make next year pretty boring because they could probably win 80 games if they really tried.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, again, I love to watch amazing basketball, and I think the Warriors are playing beautiful basketball right now. So, I mean, of course I want to be right, but I'd also love to see a 7-game series.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, on to the next subject. As I told you before, I texted you about this podcast, I did have, like, a quick... coaching question I had, something that I've been thinking about while I was coaching. I wanted to talk about starting lineups and player rotations.
Okay.
Are you a set starting lineup guy? Like, you know, like, I guess, of course, the Warriors, of course. But or are you, do you like to switch things up depending on, you know, matchups and so on, like a Popovich. What type are you?
You know, I look at how my players play. Okay, so I've got some players that I know that they're at their best right after warmups. They need to start.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got players that I know are great as a starter, who I pull at the 2 minute mark, and then I put back in at the 6 minute mark, because they get fired up, and so I do a lot. I don't tinker a ton with the starting lineup just because of sort of the way my teams are built. I don't have that luxury, but I certainly tinker with rotations during the game, and it, a lot of it is, you know, I ride the hot hand. You know,
if Okay. Well,
if someone's playing well, I'll leave them out there. You know, if someone's really stepping up, like if they're in a groove, and this is not like they're just hitting shots. If I've got someone who is really asserting themselves on defense, you can see that confidence that comes from you know, being great on defense, and they're a quarterback in the defense, and they're doing all these things, I will leave them in there until they ask to come out. Because those things are so hard to replicate, and they're so hard to get back. You know, good shooters are going to be able to shoot. You can pull them out of the game, they catch a blow, and you can throw them back in, and they're going to be able to shoot. But when you're dealing with players who maybe aren't that great, I think that getting them into a rhythm, into a zone, so to speak, is so important. And so I like to just stick with them and let them run. And, you know, international games, 40 minutes. Here in high school, it's 32 minutes. So it's not that – it's not like a 48-minute NBA game. I've got players that I've played 32 minutes. In high school.
Oh, okay. Because, so the full game.
Yeah, because they can handle it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to play the full game. Mm-hmm. And that's just – that's how it is. When I coached in Europe, I had a couple of guys that would play – you know, I definitely had guys play 40 minutes before.
Wow.
So that's – it's more like Tom Thibodeau in that sense. But at the same time, I also will do hockey subs, and I will sub five people in.
Oh, so really?
It varies. I make the determination – during the game.
So it is game to game, situation to situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I don't tinker a lot with the starters.
Mm-hmm.
I like to give people, like, this is your role, because when it's more about practice for when people have their roles than it is the games. Because in the game, your role changes every game, because the team that you play changes. You know, you know, I normally don't care about positions and who people are guarding. You know, my point guard doesn't really guard a point guard. I've had my point guard because for my girls' team, she's just a bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put her on a girl that's 6 inches taller than her that's a wing player. So I'm not so worried about that. But obviously her job in that game has now changed. She's got to do more on defense. So, you know, I will adjust my rotations that way. Mm-hmm. So for me, the roles that I put people in are more for how we run practice and things like that than they are in the game.
So I think – that was actually my next question, you know, asking about how you deal with or do you actually leave the guys that are playing well, of course. And I think that would be the best decision. But
unless I see fatigue – uh-huh. Right. If I see someone hands on the knees, I pull them. I mean, even if you're playing well, I want you to catch a break. But I'm throwing you back out there the second that you've caught a break.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, for my best players, I try to be smart about my rotations. So, you know, if I'm playing, if it's 10 minute quarters or 8 minute quarters, so I'm going to pull you at a minute to go, give you that minute, then you'll have the between quarter break. And then I'm going to see how you are to start the quarter. You may go in, or I may just wait a minute. And then next thing you know, I've squeezed like 5 minutes of rest out of 2 minutes of game time.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is some NBA coaches are great at this, mm-hmm. and some are really, really bad.
Mm.
I think that using that quarter break is just, to me, that's the next level of rotation stuff.
Mm-hmm. And you're also taking in the NBA, you're also taking like a timeout, right? Maybe sure. Towards the end of the quarter to buy more time.
Right.
So it's like three minutes of game time and then like 15 minutes of actual time, you know.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How about so let's say a player is not playing well. You know, just not playing well. You know, not fatigue, just not playing well.
Okay.
How long do you leave them out to see to make that decision. You know what I mean? Like, I always think about
a bad game.
Yeah, I always think about that. Like, there are cases where I do leave them in for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And they do catch a groove and they start playing well.
Right.
How do you make that determination, or how long do you wait?
Well, I usually give them a long leash. And, oh, okay. But because I'm not so worried about, I'm not worried if they're playing well. I'm worried if their head is in the game. Everyone's going to have a bad game. Every player is going to have a bad game. But if I can see that mentally you're not there, that means you're not going to bounce back. So then I will pull you. And that's where I like to go sit on the end of the bench during the game next to the person that I just pulled. And I have them start calling out, all right, tell me what's happening right now. Like, we're going to talk about what's happening during the game. What are you seeing? How can I put you in a position so that you can do better? Next thing you know, you've got them. They're not thinking about their game. They're thinking about the entire game. And it's more of an abstract sort of thought. So you basically get to reset their confidence. And then, you know, I'll give them a couple minutes and then I'll throw them right back out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll call a play for them.
Mm.
You know, I'll make sure that they get to touch the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then that's when you, for the most part, that works for me. You know, I had good success with that. I don't have a lot of players that have huge up and down swings. I've got a couple, and some of that is you just deal with it. You know, it's like a Tesla rocket launch.
Mm-hmm.
If I can get the rocket launched 1 out of 5 games, all right, well, I'll live with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's doing okay.
Mm-hmm. What do you do, or what do you say? It's kind of drifting off from the main subject, but like, what do you do, or what do you say when all of the players are not, you know, mentally engaged, or, you know, the team itself is not engaged.
Is out of it.
Yeah, out of it, yeah.
I've had that happen.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's when I call a full timeout,
mm-hmm.
and I talk about anything but basketball in the huddle.
Hmm.
Okay. I just break it up. I try to get them laughing, try to get them relaxed.
Uh-huh.
I think that what happens a lot of times where you have your team and they're just playing really bad, I think it's because it's like a snowball rolling downhill. And it starts out, it's like, okay, well, it's not too bad. We'll fight back. When the next thing you know, that snowball is, you know, 7 stories tall, and there's no way you're fighting back. So at that point, it's time to just, all right, well, why are we here in the first place? When you started playing basketball as a kid, why did you do it? Did you do it because you wanted to win games in high school? No. Did it because it was fun. Okay, so let's go out. Let's do some fun stuff. I've actually got some fun plays that are just goofy, that are not real basketball plays, but it makes them laugh in practice when they're doing it. You know, and I'll call that play and I'll say, all right, we're gonna try this and see if it works. And then we start experimenting, and then you know you get them laughing and have fun. And so even if you get blown out, you at least say, you know what, we still had a good time. We mm-hmm. still enjoyed ourselves, especially at the level that I'm coaching right now. You know, when I was coaching in Germany, with obviously professional guys, a little bit different. And if the whole team was playing bad, my motivation tactics were a little more like Greg Popovich than like a nice guy. You rip into him a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you challenge him.
Mm-hmm.
And you hope that you get back out there. But the other thing is, you know, fun is involved, I think. I think that when you're playing well, it's more fun. And when the ball is moving, it's more fun and things like that. So a lot of it really depended on what was happening. If we just have, like, a lot of possessions where it was one pass and a shot, then, you know, I would rip them a new one and not care about the fun part. But if it was, we're moving the ball well, we're getting good looks, and we're just missing shots, well, then that's when you want to break it up. You want them to just relax.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing you can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Very interesting. Do you have...
How is it...
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
How is it in Japan? Like, in the Japanese league?
As far as it's kind of generational, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see a lot of... You see coaches acting differently depending on the ages of the coaches. like older coaches do rip into you a lot, especially in high, probably until college. College ball, I think a lot of the coaches are very strict, almost militaristic sometimes. Isn't that the same with Korea? Like, I think that was my image with Korean basketball when you were there.
Well,
right?
Honestly, man, it's the same kind of around the world.
Oh, really? Is that, okay.
Yeah, I think the more old school coaches are much more yell to motivate because that's how it was for them. And my coaches, growing up, that's how they were, too. But they were unimaginative. To me, if I have to, if the only way I can motivate you is to scare you or yell at you, then I'm not doing my job right. First of all, I shouldn't have to work hard to motivate you, because if you're on the basketball court, you should want to be there, right? There shouldn't be this thing where I have to coax you into playing the game. Now, my job as a coach is to give you the, here are the skills. We're going to build up your tools, and now we have to apply it in the game. I actually don't call a lot of plays during games because I have taught them how to play, how to move the ball, how to do all this stuff that I shouldn't have to sit and call plays. I concentrate my coaching during in-game way more on the defensive end than the offensive end. As far as like when I'm being vocal, I call switches and things like that, you know, because for younger players, those are harder to kind of judge. But I think that my job is to foster an environment that makes people feel like they are allowed to fail, because otherwise you won't get great success. If people are so worried about, well, I just don't want to screw up, you're never going to achieve a really high level of success. I actually think that's one of the keys with the Warriors. They're not worried about little mistakes. That makes sense.
Okay. Do you have, by the way, do you have doubleheaders in where you coach? Like,
No. Okay. High schools normally don't have that. I think some AAUs will have it, but no, okay. Not normally.
There's a lot of that in Japan. Or the really? Leagues I coach, yeah. Two games.
Interesting.
Day. Yeah. So, it's one of the reasons I talked, I asked you about the player rotations is that's something that you really have to think about, because
that really is.
And it's a tournament too. So you have to win the two games. Like, it's not a league. So you really have to manage your time. And I coach adults, so, and some guys are vets, you know, like mid-30s players, so.
You know what I would consider, just a little unsolicited advice, what I would consider is taking your time in the half court in the first game.
Yeah.
And then trying to get out and run and pressure the basketball on defense in the second game. Hope that you're better conditioned.
Yep.
And hope that the first game you get them tired and you're conserving energy. And then in the second game, you know, really try to turn it on and ramp up the pace. Okay. But you probably already do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I think about the minutes of the starters or the main players or the top scorers, you know, in the first game. And then try to go all out in the second game. But and there's also and the interesting thing is they also, it's kind of a problem in a sense that they have that mentality too, the players. Because they know they have two games. So they think about conserving more energy sometimes in the first game. But if you're too concerned about the second game, you lose the first one and you don't have the second game in the beginning, right? Because you lose in the tournament. So it's just a really hard, you know, it's a thing I've been thinking about a lot.
That would be really difficult to coach. That would be a very difficult way to coach. I think I would just try to have those guys in the best condition they could possibly be in. And then hope it works out.
Yeah.
You guys run the mountains and stuff?
No, we just do 17s a lot.
Oh, okay.
The guys are running individually, you know.
Okay.
But during practice, we do 17s and we do shuttle runs and, Or we do.
See, I try to avoid conditioning during practice, mm-hmm. During the season.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you need to come in shape.
Yep.
And then we are, during the normal course of practice, we are going to do enough basketball-related drills and scrimmaging and things like that, that your cardio, you're going to get your cardio mm-hmm. up. But then you still owe me time on the weekend. Like, you need to go out and jog or run sprints or whatever. And so, you know, I try not to waste practice time, basketball practice time, with conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough because now when I was growing up, out of a two-hour practice, an hour and a half of it would be conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not basketball.
We just do three sets of 17s. Okay. And the reason is for them to it's almost like a test, like a quiz, to see where they're at, to know where they're at as far as is conditioning for them or how much in shape they have. And also they're able to compete against other players in the team to see where they're at, you know, conditioning wise, to make them to motivate them to do so.
Now, do you play with them? Do you scrimmage?
No. Mm.
Why not?
Well, unless there's like 9 guys, or or unless there's 10 guys and one guy needs to rest or something.
You know, even on all my teams, I mean, you know, when I've got enough players, I still scrimmage every practice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because I just find, as a coach on the court,
mm-hmm.
actually playing, first of all, you know, we talked about trust last time.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, like, they respect me for being out there. I'm in it with them,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm out there. I'm sweating. I'm falling down. You know, I'm doing all these things. But also, I can be on the court and show them the way that things are supposed to be done. I can execute the dribble handoff the right way. I can set the pin down screen. You know, I'm going to hit the wide open corner three. I'm going to make the right cut. I'm going to play defense hard. I'm going to do all these things. And so it's sort of one of these, it's like an accountability measure that mm-hmm. I use. If you're playing out there with me and I'm on the court with you, like, they don't want to let me down. It's mm-hmm. actually, it has worked so well as far as bringing the players that are not as good, bringing their level up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can point out things. I can, if I'm guarding someone, I can tell them what to do as I'm guarding them. You know, if players are a little shaky in what to do off the ball or with the ball, I can talk them through things. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I'm able to do by being on the court that I don't think you can do standing on the sideline. So that's mm-hmm. something you might want to think about.
Mm.
Get in there and mix it up a little bit.
Uh-huh. I think that would. Uh-huh. Huh. Because I always thought, like, maybe it was a better idea to not play, actually, to be, you know, because it would, I don't know, like, I'm competitive, so when I get into scrimmages, like, I start to think about myself, to be honest,
uh-huh.
or how well I'm playing, you know, or...
Well, you gotta change that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about, you know, you're developing players.
Yeah.
And so, that's the mindset I attack it with, mm-hmm. is my job out here is to develop. Now, with that being said, I shoot a lot. I'm a good shooter. So I play off ball, and I let them set me up. Well, they want to get the reward of seeing the ball go in the basket when they make a good pass. So I shoot. And on defense, I'm giving it to them as hard as I can, mm-hmm. because I'm a good defender. And I want them to know what it feels like to have someone hounding you on defense and you know, why you can't be loose with your handle and why you know, you can't drop the ball low on a rebound and things like that. So yeah, I go at them a little bit, but my mindset is I play much more like a Draymond Green than like a Kyrie Irving.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So you told our viewers what your game was like. It's more like Draymond kicking them in the balls.
Hang on. Now, if we're playing, you know, we're playing in real life, it's much more like a Steph Curry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a one motion shot?
I do.
Oh, really?
I do have a one motion shot. Oh, okay. Shot.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You right-handed?
Am I what?
You right-handed?
I am right-handed.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a lefty.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Ugh,
the worst. Yeah, but I have a one motion shot.
Uh-huh.
I shoot 30-footers. Steph Curry, his deep shots, those are more like my shots than my shots are like him. I've been shooting 30-footers since I was like, 12 years old.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. I used to get in trouble all the time.
Yeah, and you get less trouble these days, I'm imagining.
Yeah.
Right? With kids, I guess.
Well, my philosophy on the 3-point line is just because the line is there doesn't mean you have to stand on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I spread the floor out. I mean, we start out, if you're a spot up shooter, you're spotting up in my offense like 25 feet out.
Mm-hmm.
I think our line is at like 20 feet or something. Mm-hmm. Our high school 3-point line.
Okay. The one that sticks to the free throw circle, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
To the top of the key. Mm-hmm. And so you're set up about 4 or 5 feet behind that, because I want to give you a chance. First of all, we want to stretch the defense out as much as possible.
Ooh, so you're doing the D'Antoni.
Oh,
the
yeah,
D'Antoni absolutely. Ryan Anderson
100%.
Strategy. Okay.
And so we're stretching the floor out as much as possible. And if the defense is dumb enough to come guard you, 5 feet from the line, then we're attacking backdoor. We're getting downhill. We're cutting to the hoop. Or we're just driving to the hoop because there's so much space.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that these coaches that have that put people right on the line, I think it's just a mistake. Not to mention that you get a lot of people then stepping over the line, either on a 1-2 step shot or on a little hop.
Mm-hmm.
For a spot up shot. So I give my kids tons of room. We don't have a lot of shots where guys have a foot on the line. We're mm-hmm. we're usually shooting like almost NBA threes.
Oh, really?
And, okay. Yeah, and I'm happy with it.
Okay.
It's fine. We my team hit 14 threes in our last game mm-hmm. last season. We set a new state record. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. We were 14 for 48.
That sounds like a Rockets team stat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We put up 87 points in 32 minutes.
Wait, 48 threes?
We took 48 threes.
In 32 minutes, right? 32 minutes
That's
of game
right.
time. Wow.
That's right. And we scored 87 points.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we did okay.
Is that a high scoring game for a high school game?
87 points is pretty high.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's pretty high.
Oh, yeah. I see.
There are definitely teams that go higher, but mm-hmm. we were also playing regular defense. Like it was a real game. It wasn't a Chino Hills sort of
LaMelo
game.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
So I have a few great shooters in my team, and I've been telling them a lot about gravity. And that's something that I've been trying to preach. Like a lot of the guys, they get face guarded. My shooters, and the opponent bench is the guys on the bench are all yelling like, recognize the shooter, be out on the shooter,
sure.
And sometimes my guys get frustrated, because okay. they're defended hard. But the gravity is there, and there's so much spacing, because the defend, all you have to do is just play 4-on-4, right?
That's right.
With
That's
a lot
right.
of space.
I was glad. I have had that. My best player last year, they just started sticking a man in his chest 94 feet. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically the entire time. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I was like, don't cross half court.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just stay back on defense.
Mm-hmm.
They won't get any transition baskets.
Yep.
And we'll play 4-on-4 gladly
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because we operate really, really well with lots mm-hmm. of space.
Yep.
How are they going to defend with all that space?
And I told them, like, they get so frustrated. But the thing is, my guy gets very frustrated when that happens because
yeah.
he wants to get the ball. He wants to shoot, and he wants to score. But, like,
sure.
I would tell him that, it's almost like you almost have to be honored to be defended
Absolutely.
Like that. Like it's a sign of respect, and you've earned
Absolutely.
That respect to
100%.
Yeah. So that's something that you should be proud of what's happening, and the gravity you're causing and the space you're creating for the other guys. So, that's contribution
and,
right there.
And you're making the game easier for your teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And, the other thing is, depending on where he is, like if they're sticking a man, if they're all over him and he's like in the corner, he could stunt baseline and probably get that guy to go all the way to the block and then pop right back to the corner for an open three.
Mm.
And it makes you work a little bit harder, but to me, that's way more rewarding. You know, when I've got a guy blanketing me, and I'm just killing him with cuts back door, or you know, stunting inside and getting mm-hmm. him to, you know, to be out of position, and I'm shooting contested shots that are good looks. And I love that. I enjoy that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, I can get his frustration. But the other thing is, you know, just take yourself out of the offense, play hard defense, try to create some turnovers. Mm-hmm. And get some buckets in transition that way, mm-hmm. and use that extra energy that you have, because you're not doing much on offense. Use that extra energy on the defensive end and try to affect the game that way. You know, mm-hmm. there's your challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the shooters they're so concerned about getting the ball and shooting, of course. So.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we all want to score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. I do have more questions, but let's save that for next time, I guess. Yeah, I have a bunch of them for you. So,
really?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Awesome. Uh-huh. Good.
You give great answers too, good. And I think. Thanks. Yeah, and my viewers did love the first show that you were on.
Yeah.
A lot of them were. We do have not viewers, listeners. Who understand English, or there are a bunch of people who are asking me about, you know, what we were talking about. I shared a lot of them on Twitter, so.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
Well, tag mm-hmm. me, feel free to tag me in those on Twitter, and I'll, you know, even if they aren't great at English, I can do my best with mm-hmm. the Japanese. Mm-hmm. Twitter helps with the translations.
Yes, so. Awesome.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Yeah, so thanks for coming on. Let us know your handle again, your Twitter handle.
Yeah, it's at Coach Dave Dufour, and it's the numeral 4 at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And then my podcast is on the NBA with Coach Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually just started a YouTube channel.
Oh, no way, okay.
Yeah, uh-huh. So... But it's not a basketball channel necessarily. Oh. It's just kind of a vlog. I started running.
I'm gonna run. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so I decided, you know, after talking to some friends, you know, I wanted to start a YouTube channel, and there's so many basketball YouTube channels, and you know, I love basketball, but there's a lot more to my life than just basketball. There's a lot of things that I enjoy. And so, yeah, I decided I'd start a vlog. I lead a fairly interesting life. I travel a lot. I do a lot. And so, yeah, I decided to start a vlog and try that out. And, yeah, the first episode went up the other day. And you can find that through my Twitter page. I think it's my pinned tweet. I think it's okay. My YouTube channel. Okay. So, yeah.
Awesome. So you've been running daily? Or how often?
I've been running every other day.
Okay, how much do you run?
So right now I'm at like 2 miles. I'll be working my way up.
Uh-huh.
I'll do 5 kilometers soon, and then I'll do 10, and then I think I'll do like a half marathon, so 20 kilometers.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah.
So that's your goal so far?
I think so. Yeah, uh-huh. I'm looking for a cool half marathon to do. Maybe I should come to Tokyo.
Oh, yeah, 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 totally. Uh-huh. Yeah. But, like, there's, like, a Tokyo Marathon in March, like, end of February, yeah. March every year. And, like, the odds of, like, being able to run is, like, 100 to 1 or something like that.
Oh,
it's,
right.
It's so really, really, really popular. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch for you to run. I'll introduce you to some when you're ready to go.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right, okay, Dave Dufour, Coach Dave, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. This is fun.
Okay, so talk to you soon again.